right, all right. Happy Thursday on the Ira Kaufman Podcast. Heard only on JoeBucksFan.com, as well as iTunes and Podbean and all those cool podcast channels where you can listen to all the episodes of The Custodian of Canton, including Tuesdays. If you missed it, Ira went deep into some little bit of new news on John Lynch, dove into all the Adrian Peterson chit-chat and all kinds of things, looking at the Falcons and how ties into what the Bucks are going to do in free agency and the approach at One Buck Palace. So plenty to look back on at the Ira Kaufman Podcast. But today we're covering new ground, Mr. Kaufman, Tampa Bay's only Hall of Fame voter. I'm Steve Isbitz with Lee DeCamper of JoeBucksFan.com. And Ira, let's get right to it on your fantastic podcast presented by Ed Morse Cadillac Tampa and Ed Morse Cadillac Brandon. We talked about this last time, Jason Light. You know, you guys, two of you, yeah, sort of hinted that Jason Light might be looking for a new contract. We haven't heard about an extension for him. You also talked, Ira, a lot about Pioli and Dimitrov doing their magic in Atlanta to lead them to the Super Bowl here and some of the quick changes that were made after Mike Smith left. Do you think the whole Belichick, Pioli, Dimitrov situation and that connection there, does that help Jason Light in the Glazers' confidence in him and maybe give him even a little bit more power when they know that, hey, Jason's following this model and this whole Belichick thing that works? Does it give him a little more cachet as we go into free agency in the draft?
I don't think the success of the Falcons in the last few years, which Pioli deserves some credit because Dimitrov was not doing a particularly good job those last few years with Mike Smith at the helm, which is one of the reasons Mike Smith didn't succeed those last 2 years in Atlanta. Is that there was not an influx of good young players coming through the pipeline. But, Steve, I don't think Pioli's influence has any effect because it all stems from Belichick. And the Glazers put a tremendous amount of respect into Belichick. They do.
Sure they do.
And they should. They're very tight with Robert Kraft as owners.
Are they?
Yeah, they're very tight with Kraft. One of their best friends among the owners is Robert Kraft. They also like Dan Snyder, so take that for what it's worth.
Dan Snyder knows how to make money, though.
I understand. And Jerry Jones also is influential. Hmm. But maybe Bob Kraft above all, and that's not a bad role model, Lee. Not a bad role model. And I think they've run a couple of names past Belichick along the way, and Greg Schiano's name comes to mind.
Obviously, yes.
Obviously, I think Belichick was a factor in hiring Greg Schiano once Chip Kelly turned him down. Steve, they were kind of stuck at that point, starting from scratch.
Sure.
And I think they reached out. Maybe Kraft got them to Belichick, and, you know, whether it was a direct conversation with Belichick or through a third party like Kraft, Schiano's name came up. I don't think Pioli's success with Atlanta is going to give them more faith or less faith in what they are going forward.
What was the story? It came out a couple weeks ago. Peter King let it out. Was it San Francisco that damn near hired Schiano? Somebody almost hired Schiano right before the Bucks. And
that was
a week
the Rams.
Later.
The Rams,
that's right. Someone in the West Coast. And a week later, boom, the Bucks hired him. And the guy who was interviewing Schiano was Mr. Kevin Demoff, who was with the Bucks. And he was a confidant of Bucks rock star general manager Mark Donald.
There you go. I think Light's history with the Patriots
was
a big factor in Light getting the job.
I set you up and you didn't swing at the pitch.
No. I took it for strike one.
No, I wanted to ask you that, and I'm glad you touched on that because, you know, the NFL is a very what have you done for me lately and fad kind of league, and there's a lot of talk this week as we head toward the Super Bowl about these, you know, Bill Belichick's disciples in the personnel end of it.
Steve, I'll tell you one thing where I think the success of the 2016 Falcons is going to have a direct reinforcement on the Glazers is you got to score points. You got to score more points. Now, Cutter's been talking about that, you know, more specifically about explosive plays. And for our readers that read my Monday column, it's all about the stats back up Cutter. In terms of these explosive plays, the Bucks were terrible.
Well, that's why they got Aguayo.
They were terrible this year on explosive plays, and Cutter's not whistling Dixie about that. It's the top priority. And you look at the success of the Falcons; they are fantastic on explosive plays, and that's probably New England's priority number one, is limiting those going into the Super Bowl, and Belichick's a master at it. But here's the difference. Yeah, he might be able to focus in on Julio Jones, who's not going to go for a buck 80 in Houston against the Patriots, but the beauty of the Atlanta offense is they spread it out in tremendous fashion. And Lee, you mentioned it on our other podcast earlier in the week. It's not that easy to control an offense that is so varied and hits you from so many directions. That is going to really be a problem for Belichick's defense.
Now, Ira, of course, the background noise, some of the hooting and hollering is not the typical rabble-rousing in your backyard.
I thought they're backing up what I'm saying, Steve.
Well,
I thought it's support.
They may be, but we're here at Port Richey, Hooters of Port Richey, right on the waterfront, right off U.S. 19. All the locations for your nearest Hooters are available at originalhooters.com. This one's definitely my favorite with the beautiful water view right here in Port Richey. Fantastic environment and just a lot of fun.
And they blissfully survived that storm that ripped through Pasco County. Blissfully.
They did. There's no damage here. A couple of puddles. That's about it.
The only damage is this podcast over there, Steve.
That could be. Thanks so much for Hooters again for hosting us. Lee, you wanted to whack out.
Yeah, you mentioned points. Cutter talks about points. He's exactly right. Now, the guy I'm going to mention, by magic of modern technology, there are many fairly new modeled cars and trucks where you can listen to this wonderful podcast while you're driving into work on weekday mornings. Even though Tampa Bay local radio does not give you local sports any longer, you can still have Bucks Talk.
That's right.
And whenever you want it on your podcast driving into work. So this, what the guy's name I'm going to invoke now to reinforce your point about points, it's going to make Bucks fans punch their windshield as they're coming into work. Roberto Aguayo. That's one of the driving forces the Bucks drafted the guy for. Points, 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 points. And what's he doing? He's clanking the damn things.
No question about it. And that's why he's going to have competition, Lee,
in training camp.
He's going to have it without question, Steve. I thought Lee was going to make a reference to Ed Moore's Cadillac over there, Steven.
I thought he was
you're jumping at the bit.
Oh, that's fine. No, but the points thing is accurate.
You said it's a copycat league, Steve.
It is. It's a copycat. It's a trend league. And we've shifted, from the defensive teams last year
Now
we're high-flying offense, with the Falcons in there. And they're in the division, which really magnifies everything. And good for the Bucks and good for the Glazers because the Bucks have two games next year against the Super Bowl team, which always helps.
And, Steve, Green Bay did not reach the NFC title game at the Georgia Dome based on their fabulous defense. They were another team, especially with Rodgers getting hotly, put up a lot of points, and they outscored you.
Now, Ira, as far as weapons go, it sort of dovetails into something I wrote over the weekend on JoeBucksFan.com. Daniel Jeremiah, he's a former scout, probably the most well-respected.
Pretty astute.
I think among NFL executives, he's probably the most well-respected of the draft gurus.
Indirect Belichick clone, indirect. Comes from the Ozzie Newsom school.
Yeah, he's worked in the league. He's been a quarterback. He's very, very astute, and he works on the draft year-round. He put out his first mock draft, which, of course, is a little silly before free agency, but nonetheless, he had the Bucks drafting a defensive end. Now, not going into the specifics on the player, not really relevant to what I'm saying, do you see the Bucks potentially going defensive end in the first round, looking to bolster this pass rush that, frankly, has an old Robert Ayers, Noah Spence coming off a shoulder injury, Will Golston who can't rush
Smith
the passer,
hurt.
And Jaquie Smith coming off an ACL.
You can't bank on it.
You could almost say the Bucks are desperate for a pass rusher in the long term. What's your take?
Well, you said it right at the start. Much will depend on free agency, Lee. And although you roasted me in the previous podcast for suggesting that Calais Campbell would not be a bad free agent addition for the Bucks, I don't think that goes against anything I wrote on Joe Bucks Fan. I just said they're going to be strategic. Calais Campbell would be a strategic addition. Now, granted, he's not coming for $4 million, Lee, but I kind of like everything about Calais Campbell. And if they do land him, Steve, I think that severely impacts whether they would draft a defensive end in the first round.
I actually beat Steve to the punch a little bit on this very same subject. Although I think
you guys are high on Calais Campbell, too.
Oh, yeah. It's a smart move, if they could do it. Smart move. And like you said, no one will have better intel on him than Jason Light. As a matter of fact, Jason Light was there when they drafted him.
For those wondering, he's a defensive tackle slash defensive end, 6'8", about 320, Pro Bowler. You know, for the people who don't see him a lot in Arizona, he's been a rock.
Well, like I said this past, I think I had this story the day before Steve wrote it, but the same similar. One of the most irritating things about the Bucs trading up the draft Roberto Aguayo, and there goes another windshield I hear cracking in the distance. I know the Bucs organization was very high. I'm not even going to try to pronounce his last name because I'll butcher it. But this Yannick guy in Jacksonville came from Maryland, rookie defensive end, who I believe had 8 sacks. Is that right, Steve?
I think 8.5.
Yeah, 8.5 sacks. They could have had him and Noah Spence. Now, defensive end still is an unknown for the Bucs. And I'll regurgitate kind of what Steve said. Noah Spence, always got... I mean, I love his attitude. I love the guy's attitude. He put his shoulder back into place. I don't give a damn how much he got shot up painkillers. That's agony going through that. And on the field, yeah, put my shoulder back into place. He's got promise, but there's a big unknown about him yet, especially coming off the shoulder surgery. That's number one. Number two, Jack Smith, can't bank on him. Always hurt. You can't bank on him. Will Golston, give me a break. So that's still a need. It's still a need. And that's what was so frustrating last year. When the Bucs, when they did draft up to get Aguayo, they basically shot their wad, so to speak. That's a shotgun term. That's not a nasty term. That's going back to my Midwest upbringing. I actually, once upon a time, built shotgun shells for hunting. He actually produced them. And you could do that back then with the gunpowder and everything. And there's the thing called the wad. You put the wad in there. Anyway. The Bucs shot their wad. They didn't have any ammunition left. They couldn't trade up to get above Jacksonville to get Yannick. Whereas before, they had every opportunity at Yannick. And that was what's so frustrating about Aguayo. NFL history is littered with top field goal kickers, place kickers that are picked up off the street, not drafted in the second round when your team had so many other needs.
Steve, are we ever going to do a podcast where DeKemper doesn't reference the problems of Roberto Aguayo slash Charles Sims? The whole rest of this year, Steve, will we have one podcast DeKemper doesn't bring up those two names?
If you do not learn from history, you are doomed to repeat.
You can keep track. You can keep track. I mean, Aguayo, for sure. I don't know. I think he might come May. He might lay off Charles Sims a little. We'll see.
Steve, I want to ask.
I'll say this real quick about Light and Aguayo. I wouldn't have had the cojones to do it. I understood Light's logic. It wasn't well placed, though.
Well, obviously, so far, it hasn't worked out. Steve, now I'm going to throw up a question to you two gentlemen. Steve, is this a stretch? But if Jason Light runs Calais Campbell, and he's a big enough free agent to run past the Glazers.
He's going to command $10 million. Yeah.
So when they run it past the Glazers, Steve, is it possible that the Glazers' response is, I thought you got Calais Campbell last year with Robert Ayers? How'd that work out? Would the Glazers say something like that? I know they're two different players, but this is a veteran defensive end, which they paid money to last year.
Well, defensive tackle more than anything, right?
Well, he does both.
I like that versatility.
He's been in a 3-4, and so he's flexible. He's just a great football player. I love playing Team Glazer. Thank you, Ira. It's one of my favorite hobbies, pretending to be a Glazer.
What do you say if you're Jason Light? I'm Glazer.
First of all, I don't really understand why Glazers would ask that question, but that's neither here nor there. The Glazers just ponied up 2 years to lock in and some big bucks to lock in Mike Smith. If you're not going to give the guy the players he thinks you need to go over the top and win a Super Bowl, then what's the point? Why'd you pay Mike Smith? That's just my opinion.
Well, also,
would it inhibit how many snaps Noah Spence gets in year two if you have Campbell, Robert Ayers, if Golston's back?
No, because I don't think Golston will be back personally. That's just me.
Would it inhibit Noah Spence's development?
I don't think so, because I think if you sign Campbell, Golston is gone, and then Spence plays as much as he can.
And where's Ayers on third down?
He's on there, too. You got Spence and the two big guys in the middle, McCoy and Campbell, and Ayers on the outside, and they can mix it up.
Yeah, as to your premise about if the Glazers say, hey, we got Robert Ayers, well, I don't think that the Glazers, nor Jason. I expected Jack Smith to blow out his knee the first game of the year. So he's almost a non-factor right now because, A, you don't know if he's going to come back from injury, number one. Number two, you don't know if he's going to even stay healthy or
Steve's
not.
Steve's answer is good because the answer is Campbell's versatile enough to go inside. If Campbell was strictly a D-end, that question would have more validity.
Now, how much younger is he than McCoy? I don't know this. That's what I'm asking.
Clay Campbell's he'll be 31 next season.
Okay.
He's 30.
He's much older.
And in the old days, the Bucks wouldn't look twice at, you say, not interested in a 31-year-old.
Well, that's the beautiful that you're leading me into this thing, but because I have a great point to want to run by you. But as long as I did get the chance to play Team Glazer,
yes.
I would say, Jason, we're $63 million under the cap. Here's the checkbook. We got to spend the
want,
money. Do
friend.
What you want. You screw up, you're out of here. Don't worry about it. That's what I would say. But Ira,
by the way, my research also tells me that Campbell is a very, very good teammate. And you know, the Bucks built a lot of chemistry this year, Lee. People like to scoff at that. I don't. I think it was a big part of their success.
Oh, absolutely.
And it's going to be a big part going forward.
Well, part of the reason that defense turned around, apparently Robert Ayers got the defense together, and to use the NFL player's term, dog cussed him. So and he's a big character guy.
And guys, in the words of Brent Grimes, they don't have a lot of independent contractors running out there.
Exactly. Now, Ira, your podcast presented by Ed Morris Cadillac Tampa and Ed Morris Cadillac Brandon. I'm going to tell everybody some really cool stuff about Ed Morris Cadillac Brandon in a moment. But before my computer dies here with my battery, let me run this stat by you, Ira, because it relates to the 30-year-old free agents. Okay, that's fascinating, I think. Looking at the teams that played in the divisional round of the playoffs, okay, we had eight teams, a final eight. The number of players older than 30 who started 10 games or more for these teams. Seahawks had 5. Texans had 5. Cowboys had 4. Falcons had 4. Now remember, these are players 30 and older who started 10 games or more. Patriots had 4. Steelers 3. Packers 3. Chiefs 2. Bucks only had 4. DeMar Dotson, Grimes, Darryl Smith, and
Ayers.
So that is their Bucks are right in line.
They're right
in line.
Four
30-year-old starters now.
Darryl Smith's likely
gone. If Darryl Smith retires, which is 50-50, I'd say, and we know that that would bring him down to 3. If they sign 2 30-year-old starters, they're right there with everybody else who made the playoffs. So if they have 5.
Well, you want Peterson, Jackson, and Campbell. That would make 6, Steve.
So
I can do the math too, baby.
I'm just saying, if they sign 2 30-year-old starters, they're right in line with all the playoff teams, even the Patriots and the Falcons. So
McCoy might turn 30. Who knows?
No, I'll double-check his age. I think he's going to be 29 next year.
Okay.
Before the start, coming up in a couple of weeks.
Look, Steve. I agree with your basic point. There was a time not long ago, Lee, when the Bucks looked at the free agent market, and I think this was ownership driven. I do. And if you were 30 or 31, they simply weren't interested in you. They just weren't interested in you. I think that hurt the team. During the Schiano years, maybe even during the Lovie Smith years. I think that's changed, guys. And look, I'm going to take the Glazers at their word, Steve. They're all about cycles. And they kind of see, where the cycle is. They got core young players. And I think you need to augment them with veterans because players get tired of listening to stuff from coaches. It gets tired. And if you can listen to a Robert Ayers or a Brent Grimes, Lee, it goes a long way in developing these young players.
You want me to get this guy worked up real quick?
Get him worked up, baby.
The last time the Bucks had a winning record, what'd they do in free agency, Steve?
Nothing.
Sat on their butt.
Yeah, they signed a punter.
Nice, Steve. Nice.
Which is comical, really. If you apply that now, it's just mind blowing how they did that in 2011. They decided that we're staying pat. We're good. We're 10-6. We're good.
Let's hope they learn that lesson, Steve. Let's hope.
One of the great stories of 2010. It came out afterwards, but Ian Beckles, former guard radio host, was having a chat with Raheem Morris. He was having some wine with him and Joe Madden.
Was this after the season?
This was after the 2010 season. And the way Beckles tells it, he's having wine with Joe Madden and Raheem, and they're talking Bucks. And it was probably an off-the-record conversation, which Beckles shared on the air.
Now, Raheem was feeling his oats after a 10-win season.
Feeling his oats, 10-6. And he says to Beckles, man, if I would have pushed harder for Julius Peppers, who said sign with Lovie and the Bears, if I knew that we were going to be this good. They didn't think they were going to be that good, going into 2010.
Neither did any Buck fan.
Neither did anybody else. But it hurt them in misassessing the 2010 team, and then they misassessed the 2011 team. And you know, that's just an organizational screw up of epic proportions.
I got a question for you, and I know your best buddies with former Bucks Rockstar general manager Mark Domin.
Thank you.
How much of the fact that they only signed a punter, which makes drafting up in the second round for a place kicker just it pales in comparison. You sign a punter, that's it. How much of that was just hubris of the front office? Like, you know, we got this figured out. We got this all figured out. No one expected us to win 10 games. We got 10 wins. We got a young quarterback. We got a young running back. We got a young coach. We get this all figured out. We don't need anybody else. How much of that?
There's a lot of ways you could look at it, Steve. You could look at it where the Glazers thought it was a fluke. We're really not that good. We're far away. You could look at it from a cheapness angle. I mean, it's there. A lot of Buck fans think that. You know, Manchester United could have been a factor in all that. A lot of Buck fans think that, too. Their attention was turned towards the soccer team in terms of spending resources. Whatever it was a colossal mistake because they couldn't follow up with the 10-win season. We then went through the Raheem Morris collapse, the Schiano years, and the Lovie Smith year. It was a big mistake.
Yeah, it's interesting. It's a great question by Lee, a great thing to be pondering here at Hooters over
and
a
I don't think
they're going
to make that mistake again coming off a 9-win season.
No, and I think the beauty of it is they have a head coach now who'd walk into the office and say, what the hell are we doing?
Yeah.
We just went 9-7. We just locked up Mike Smith. I didn't change a coach. We got ultimate continuity. We got to win some.
We got a franchise quarterback.
Let's do this. Yeah. Exactly.
I imagine Cutter is thinking like, look, Mr. Glazer, you want me to win a division. We got to go up against the Super Bowl team now. We can't.
You
got to be aggressive.
You got to learn from past mistakes.
Yeah.
So you have to.
I think that's key. It's a great point that Lee brings up. I think sort of the answer might lie in the Bucks had what they believed was a franchise quarterback who had a better second year than Winston did. They had a beast of a running back. They had an excellent offensive line. They had two young receivers in Williams and
Mike
Ben.
Mike Williams looked good.
And Aurelius Ben. You know, they believed in Ben. And they had a tight end who was very successful in his prime in Mr.
Winslow.
So they didn't need weapons for
Mr.
weapons
Target
for Freeman. They figured, okay, we'll draft a couple of defensive ends I have some hubris that we don't need to do much more, and we'll build through the draft. But it was the wrong move.
But the defense went totally south in the second half.
The whole
that,
thing messed that, up.
Yeah, it messed up. Need,
people forget this, but they went to London with a 4-2 record.
They did. They were 4-2.
They never won another
season.
Well, no, they were 4-5 going to London.
But they were 4-2 at one point.
Yeah, they were 4-2.
They were coming off a win over the Saints when they were going to London, were they not?
No, they were. I think London pushed them to like 4-6, and then they flew back and flew off the map. Yeah. They were 4-2 when they beat the Saints.
Mm-hmm. And you know what? The three of us, we never liked, it's the worst word in sports, quit. But I have never seen a team quit like the Bucks did in the last 2 months of the 2011 season. Absolutely quit.
Deion Sanders say that on NFL Network? They had an NFL Network game against Dallas. He said, I saw a lot of quit.
That's a harsh word, Steve. It's a harsh word. But we know what we saw.
Yeah, I don't remember. You know, I think it was actually, I think that was Schiano. I think he called them.
Was that
it
right?
Was Schiano that
I see a lot of quit.
He saw a lot of
quit. And the Glazers felt they had no choice but to dump Raheem at that point.
Yeah, understood. All right. Enough with the history, which is always fun. I think the broader thing we were talking about was, would the Bucks draft a defensive end? And I think, Ira, if you look at if they believe in Jay Hayes, the D-line coach, and they believe in Robert Ayers as the ultimate mentor, and Gerald McCoy, I looked it up, Ira. He turns 29 in February. If they believe they have the right environment and climate to develop a guy, maybe it's a good time. But I think a lot of fans, they wouldn't get it unless they really nail it in free agency. I think a lot of fans, right or wrong, would freak out if they draft a defensive end. I don't think they'd like it.
Well, I think, you know, you make a good point, Steve. I mean, even if they land Campbell in free agency, which I think is a strong possibility, Jason Light's going to know everything about Calais Campbell. And if he doesn't, shame on Jason Light. Steve Keim is his best friend in football. His best friend. I remember being at an NFL owners meeting. I think it was in Phoenix a couple of years ago, Steve. They're going to be in Phoenix again this year. When I was hanging out with Jason Light. And he couldn't wait to introduce me to Steve Keim. hey, here's my guy, Steve Keim. And, you know, Keim was talking up Light, and Light was talking up Keim. So, Steve, they could land Calais Campbell and still draft a defensive end and play Campbell in the middle next to Gerald McCoy. Sure. It's not a crazy idea. Steve, I'm going to say this. If the defensive end ranks higher than the next guy on the board, I'm all for taking the defensive end. I think those days of drafting for narrow need are over. You got to get a wide receiver one way or another. We know that. But I'm not taking a lesser player because he's playing, quote, the wrong position. I think that's where you make all kinds of mistakes.
Quick one here. I'm not trying to embarrass anyone here, but this is why I thought the Bucks went to London 4-2 record. I just looked it up.
Go ahead.
After the New Orleans win. The reason why I remember that, Grella, after that game, they beat New Orleans.
For our listeners, who's Grella? Who's Grella?
Well, Jonathan Grella, you're a good point. Jonathan Grella was the former media relations director of the Bucks at the time, former GOP operative.
Right.
Proudly.
Yeah,
Tom DeLay's press secretary. There you go.
Who was the linebacker? He was much maligned.
Barrett Rood.
No, under Schiano, he actually played really well. He blew. Had a nerve injury in his neck and ended his career on his shoulder. Linebacker that people crucified Dominic for, but when Schiano came, he did really well. Anyway, this guy intercepted Quincy Black intercepted a Drew Brees pass in the end zone to seal the win. The reason why I'm remembering that they went to North London after that game, Grella came to the press box and said, "Hey, on Tuesday." As the Bucks are taking off from TIA, we got a special media, you know, to show up as the team's taking off. And that's why I remember that.
Oh, okay, so they did play in Week 7.
Week 6
they beat New Orleans
in Tampa. Okay. The following week they played Chicago and London, and it all fell apart.
I stand corrected.
London falling.
London bridges. All right, Ira.
You can never have enough defensive linemen, Steve. That's the bottom line.
No.
The Bucks proved this year.
Or receivers not named.
They are going to get a speedy receiver. On that, we can rely.
Robert Heron?
One way or another, they will get a speedy,
Robert Heron.
Fast receiver because that's Dirk Cutter's number one priority.
Kenny Bell.
You know, I get the
priority. Will you stop throwing out Kenny Bell?
I get the priority there, but I think Cutter is so shell-shocked from his horrible receiving core that, I mean, if you just get a good player as a number two receiver, the guy doesn't need to be a super speedster.
I agree.
You know, I just get a good receiver in there, some good young receivers competing. You know, my point is you might not find that burner guy. You just might not find him. So I don't think all is lost if they just get a good number two receiver.
And then if you have Humphrey in his normal three spot and an emerging Cameron Brait, that doesn't look so bad.
I agree with Steve. Get a good receiver first. Worry about the burner later.
Yeah, exactly. Now, Ira,
I see some Buck fans are all they're forming a march down Dale Mabry for Cordarrelle Patterson. What's going on with this infatuation? May I say up front?
It's simple.
Wait a minute, simple. Before you start with your simpleton anecdotes, let me throw this out. He can't catch. He can't catch. He's no factor as a receiver. Just ask the Viking coaches. You want a guy that's just going to return kicks, Steve?
Ira, look.
He's good on an end around once in a while.
He caught 50 plus balls this year. He revived himself. Caught 50 balls after not really catching any the year before.
They couldn't score any points.
I'm just saying.
No quarterback.
He's a speed threat. Caught 50 something balls. He's not a number one receiver. So Bucks fans know that we need a guy who will accept being a two or a three. And he's in his second Pro Bowl this year for being a return man. If the Vikings won't pay him, which there's no reason to think they won't pay the guy. Because he's their guy. They drafted him. They've had this revival of love.
I would call him a disappointment.
He's not what
Vikings
perspective. They hope they were drafting a number one. He wasn't a number one, but he had a good year, and he's a two-time Pro Bowl returner. Come on. You saw what your friend Tyreek Hill can do. Patterson's that kind of guy.
In addition,
a return game.
I don't think he can score 12 touchdowns, Steve. But,
In addition, he's a very good gunner on the punt return, which adds, if he's only going to be a return guy.
Look at Lee looking for hidden value. Look at the Kemper.
Yeah, it's not like he's a three-play a game.
All right,
player.
I just don't want people to think he's a top-notch wide receiver.
The people are excited because they saw Freddie Martino and Russell Shepard and Bernard Reedy make the roster, and they're dying for any name. And this guy's caught 50-something balls.
By the way, Ira, I had a knock on my door the other night. It's a Florida Highway Patrol. They're looking for this Freddie Martino. He has been. No one's seen him since the Bears game. And even they can't find him in the Ramada Inn over in Vero Beach. Him and his band of renown. He's missing.
There's going to be a number two receiver on the Bucs next year, and his name's not going to be Adam Humphries, who's going to slide in and still be effective. He's going to play. There's going to be another wide receiver.
Humphries never lined up on the outside anyway, which tells you all you need to know about his ability as an outside receiver.
You want the Bucs to call you back? Write a column. It's anti-Adam Humphries. You can clock at how many hours you'll get a response.
Ira, Pro Bowl this week. And
you and I are going to be traipsing around.
We're recording this before we head out to practices, and I'm actually going to the game, which should be a lot of fun.
They went back to the conference format, though, which I think is smart.
Yes, back to the conference format, which is only thing that makes sense. It was so stupid to have a guy on your own team tackling a guy on your – come on.
You know why they did that? I'll tell you right now why they did it. And I agree. I don't disagree. That was silly. But you know why they did that? Content for the NFL Network. Hey, we're going to have the Pro Bowl draft. There's a two-hour show.
Here's Dion and Michael Irvin and, you know.
Jerry Rice.
So to replace that, they got smart and they have a skills competition, which is actually a fun thing to watch. I want to see Mike Smith.
And that's what the NBA does that people want to watch.
Yeah, I mean, let Mike Evans try to catch 10 balls with one hand and see what happens. I mean, that's the kind of fun stuff they're going to be doing. The way it shook out, Ira, we got Gerald McCoy, Mike Evans going to the Pro Bowl. No other Buccaneers. From your experience, is this a breeding ground to recruit free agents where you really think a guy like McCoy and Evans, who are very well-established stars in this league, they're not just like fringe Pro Bowlers. These are guys who are well-known and have been there before. Evans, first-timer, though. Are they going to be recruiting?
I'm going to give you a concrete answer to that, Steve, that is going to boggle your mind.
Concrete?
You led me with a beautiful assist here.
Thank you.
Okay, here we go. Let's go back to, I think the year was 2000. Keyshawn Johnson, and Warren Sapp has told this story. Keyshawn Johnson lobbied Warren Sapp and tried to talk him into convincing Dungy and Rich McKay to trade for him from the New York Jets. And it worked, Lee. The Bucs acquired Johnson. Now, look, in retrospect, I don't think you can call that a failure. Keyshawn Johnson contributed to a Super Bowl team.
He had a 100-catch season. Come on.
Now, here's the end of that story, Lee, which is important. When Keyshawn went south, which was in 2003, that's the year that he was barred. Mm-hmm. Remember, we don't want you around. The fact that Johnson recruited Sapp to lobby for him, and then he wouldn't show up at OTAs. That infuriated Sapp, and that's why Sapp and Johnson didn't get along.
To this day.
That's the main reason.
Yeah.
Because Sapp went out of his way to talk up Johnson, and then Johnson doesn't show up in the summer, and Johnson goes, I got business interests in L.A. And Sapp goes, that's not the way we do things around here. The Bucs had established a creed.
Yes. A culture.
That's right. And you know, so that's a concrete example of how you can use the Pro Bowl to try to get yourself off to another team. And you know what? In retrospect, it worked out for the Bucs to a certain extent.
Problem for the Bucs, at least as we speak. We don't, you know, we're taping this prior to you going to Orlando.
Sure.
It could change. The number one recruiter for the Bucs is not in Orlando.
That's correct. Jameis Winston. But McCoy carries a lot of weight with the players. He's got a lot of respect around the league. He also makes a big effort to stay friends with a lot of guys around the league. So it could be interesting. I'll end it on this note, Ira. One knock on Adrian Peterson, who we talked a lot about in the last podcast. We don't have to revisit that. He doesn't like OTAs and training camp. He's not a big fan of showing up for non-mandatory things. And I don't think that would fly with the Buccaneers in this regime, in the Jameis era, and what Dirk Cutter's trying to build. So that alone, to me, would eliminate Peterson right away if he even becomes an option.
If he's going to maintain that stance, he would have to change his ways.
He'd have to agree to that, but that's dicey with the NFL labor agreement. You can't have a wink-wink with a guy saying he's going to show up for non-mandatory and then punish him. But I think he's more of a high-class guy where he would be a man of his word.
His answer to that question, Steve, would probably go a long way
in
evaluating him as a possible addition.
Now, last thing on free agency, Jameis Winston, is he a factor? Does Jameis have to like the guy? You think that Jameis has reached the state where a guy comes in or he's part of the decision-making process? Is he that powerful yet?
I absolutely think he is.
I agree.
I absolutely think he is. In two scant years, two short years. We always bring this back to ownership, Steve, always. And they've anointed him as the franchise quarterback. Now, in 2010, they did the same thing to a kid named Josh Freeman. I understand that. But this guy's different. This guy shows up at 6 in the morning. This guy loves football. He is different. Maybe not as talented as Josh Freeman. Perhaps.
Perhaps.
That's another story. But he's going to have a better pro career. And in the eyes of the guys that count, the guys who write the checks, Jameis Winston needs to be included on these decisions.
Well, I can tell you, and you probably know this as well, Ira, I can tell you that Jameis Winston, to be polite, made it known to anyone and everyone at One Buck Palace when Lovey was fired, you better hire Dirk Cutter. You better hire Dirk Cutter. He was a, how shall we say, a door-to-door salesman. Better hire Cutter. And I was told that he actually cut his vacation short. Jameis was out of town. He cut his vacation short to come back and start pounding on doors at One Buck Place. You better hire Cutter.
It may not be a hype to say that this is Jameis Winston's team.
All right, Ira, we're going to turn the tables a little bit. But first, Ira, it's time to take a vacation. Time for a vacation at Ed Moore's Cadillac Brandon. Buy with zero down and make zero payments for 3 months. Did you hear that, Ira? Buy with zero down and make zero payments for 3 months right now at Ed Moore's Cadillac Brandon. Or drive new ATSs, $319 a month, XT5s, $439 a month. Take a vacation at Brandon's only luxury dealership. Visit EdMoresCadillacBrandon.com. And, of course, EdMoresCadillacTampa.com, your presenters of your podcast.
You know, Steve, next week when I'm in Houston in preparation for John Lynch in the Hall and the Super Bowl, and I'm outside the convention center.
9 days.
Which will be, the media ground zero. What's going to pull up in front of that convention center? One Cadillac after another, Steve. And who's going to come out of it? Owners, coaches, players,
cheerleaders,
and they're all going into that crazy media room. And I hope you've been there before, Radio Row. And by the end of the week, Steve, it's a three ring circus in there. And of course, I'll be part of the three ring circus.
You're the lead clown.
I'm cleaning up after the elephants, Stephen. But that's when all the models, the SI models, start walking in there. Kate Upton walks in. I don't want to get the Kemper too excited here. But that's when I'm going on with Steve Dumig. That's when I'm making my final appearance with the Mad Dog, where he can tell me why John Lynch isn't a Hall of Famer. But all the Cadillacs start pulling up, and that's the vehicle that you see, Steve.
Symbol of luxury, Cadillac, EdMoresCadillacTampa.com, and EdMoresCadillacBrandon.com. Now, Ira, you penned a column on Monday. Of course, your columns are Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. Monday, you dove into something Brian Billick, Super Bowl-winning coach of the Ravens, talks about. Refresh everybody, and what do you think of this whole toxic meter that he's got?
Well, it's called toxic differential, Steve, and while a lot of stats are skewed and you can use them any way you want, there's a few that you can't mess with. First is the scoreboard, obviously. The second one is the turnover differential. Everybody, every coach in the world, from Pee Wee or whatever, will say that's the number one factor in determining wins and losses. And it is. It is. You go over it every year. Lee, and the top 10 teams in turnover differential, 7 of them make the playoffs. The bottom 10 teams, 1 make the playoffs.
That's unless your name's Greg Schiano.
That's just the way it is every year.
Unless your name's Greg Schiano.
There you go. Now, this toxic differential is a little different, Steve, but I delved into it vis-a-vis the 2016 Bucks, and this involves big plays. The ones you make and the ones you give up, it's defined as runs that are more than 10 yards, completions that are more than 25. And, Steve, on those grounds, the Bucks were minus 28. They had six. They had 60 big plays, which is a small number.
How are defining that? What's a big play?
More than a 10-yard run and more than a 25-yard completion. Some people say 20-yard completion. This one's 25 yards. The Bucks had 60 big plays, and they gave up 88. For those who are mathematically challenged like the Kemper, that's minus 28, Steve. let me put it like this, gentlemen. This is a simple way to put it. Last in the league. 32nd in a 32-team league. Now, whether you want to blame that on Doug Martin's, you know, poor performance, it's a part of it because their runs really dropped off, or a defense that was more geared to not having a 71% completion percentage and, you know, playing a tighter coverage and you get beat deep.
Or
whatever the reason. Whatever the reason, guys. It's unacceptable. It's unacceptable. Now, you add in the plus two turnover differential, which is okay, plus two, you know, middle of the pack. And so that leaves you with that toxic differential of minus 26. The only teams that were worse than that were the Jets.
Brutal.
The Browns.
Brutal.
And maybe the Jags or something.
Brutal. I mean,
that's the company the Bucks were keeping. And the teams at the top are the ones that you would think. Dallas, Atlanta, Green Bay.
Playoffs.
Pittsburgh.
Playoffs.
And New England.
Playoffs.
Playoffs. So for this year and for a lot of years, it's very telling. And why else is Dirk Cutter talking about big plays? That's all he wants to talk about. What? Explosive plays, big plays, however you want to label it, Steve. The Bucks got to get on the right side of that, and right now they're all on the wrong side.
Explosive plays, Dirk Cutter, are what takeaways were to Lovey.
He's got
a fetish for it. By the way, for our listeners who may not be aware, Brian Billick is related to who?
Brian Billick is related to...
A guy on the Bucks staff.
Hold on.
Mike Smith's brother-in-law.
Oh, Mike Smith's brother-in-law. That's right. So he didn't point out that Mike Smith gave up 88 long plays last year. But you got to straighten that out, Steve, because picking up yards and chunks, that's why the Falcons are in the Super Bowl. They're tremendous at it. They don't throw 8-yard plays. They throw 28-yard plays. And they did it all over the field in the playoffs.
They have the talent to do that. One reason why people complain about the Bucks offense, some of our commenters, some of our followers on Twitter, that Cutter's offense was lethargic. He didn't have the horses.
Steve, when you're constantly grinding, 13 play drives, over 68 yards, that's where one penalty or one tackle for loss or a sack, it kills you. But when you're getting 31 yards at a clip, you can overcome some of these things. So that's all Cutter's thinking about, and I think Cutter's on the right track. Explosive plays, turn that short ball into, just like Julio Jones did against Green Bay. I mean, that's not Mike Evans' forte. Mike Evans is great, but that's not his forte.
He's not a yak
Julio guy, Jones could do that. Evans is not very good after the catch.
I'm not going to compare Mike Evans to a Hall of Famer. It's just not fair because really Julio Jones probably is at this point. I mean, you're the expert on that, but he's
well on his way.
He's well on his way. Has certainly had a full Hall of Fame start through his 6 years or whatever it is. The interesting thing about Cutter, and I think what makes us all happy, is that we believe that Cutter, if he gets those explosive players, will actually know how to use them. And I think John Gruden was a guy who maybe didn't always know how to use all of his weapons. Like, Gruden was one of the few quote-unquote offensive masterminds that seemed flummoxed by, I've got Antonio Bryant and I've got Joey Galloway. I can't use them on the field at the same time.
One guy's a Z, one guy's an X.
Yeah.
You can't have both of them.
Allstott can do all these things, but when he plays for me, I don't know. I can't use him effectively. So I think we all believe Cutter is a guy who, he'll use them. He'll know how to do it, and he's done it three times as a top 10 offensive coordinator.
Well, he did it in 2015 with the Bucks.
Yeah.
Set all kinds of franchise records, Lee.
And, Dante Dye, I hate to get people driving off the road, Ira, but Dante Dye is a rookie. They threw deep to him. He got open. He didn't catch the ball. He had poor hands, but he got open.
Yeah, he got open. He just couldn't catch.
And part of that was because he had the speed. They didn't even have a Dante Dye this year to work with.
Lee, one interesting factor going forward, and look, Cutter touched on this about giving up the plays. None of the three of us believe that's going to happen. None of us. He's 0 for 3 at this table. That's not going to happen. He's not giving up his play calling. But, Lee, having said that, and you mentioned this, you know, he's got to find a way, I think, to be a little more hands-on with the offense.
Mm-hmm.
Even though he's got total faith in Mike Smith on the other side of the ball, Steve, but he's got so many things on his plate, and we're part of it with his media responsibilities. You don't have that as a coordinator. You know, you go in there for your 10 minutes a week,
mm-hmm.
You know, with the press. Now he's got his own show and this and that. He's got to do Sirius. He's got to do his own show on 620. The bottom line is, Lee, he's not as actively involved with Jameis in specifically and the offense in general. And I think it showed on the field in 2016.
The clues were there. I remember after the Rams loss, Dirk Cutter, he can be feisty after a loss in his press conferences, which for media guys, it's wonderful. We love that, you know. Show some spice. But after the Rams loss, he muttered out loud, "I thought we were past this with Jameis." And I'll never forget, I had the follow-up. When he said that, my follow-up question was, has he regressed? He goes, no. And then there's, including his last press conference the day after the season was over with, you know, he all but confessed, like, you know, I'm not working with Jameis enough because I have too many duties. And I think, as you said, Ira, that showed. While Jameis may not have regressed, he didn't take the next step that so many people believed he could and
especially
would have taken.
And quarterbacks usually take in year two.
I got two words for you, Kaufman. Horse manure.
I expect nothing less.
Horse manure.
Nothing less,
look,
Steven.
He's the head. Your cutter's the head coach, right? Am
absolutely.
I correct? Okay. He's been on the record saying that he doesn't even get involved or go into defensive meetings because he doesn't want to screw things up. He is totally hands-off on the defense. Not every head coach is like that. The special teams was very strong this year, minus the Aguayo disaster. Okay, and he handed off his special teams to Nate Katzer, his guy from years back.
Keep
trusted
going,
him.
Keep digging a
so
hole.
If Cutter doesn't Ooh. Have enough time for the offense, I just don't buy it because he's got to do a media session for 10 minutes on a Tuesday.
I don't think you have any idea how many things go past Cutter's desk on a week.
No, I do understand, but there are other head coaches who that's the new craze in the NFL is play callers as head coach. What about Mr. McAdoo up with the Giants? His offense was fine. What about Sean Payton, who's handled
well,
it?
Well, Manning
years?
Was a Others. Seasoned veteran too.
All right, that's a fair
and
point.
And so is Drew Brees.
Fair point.
There you go. Double down, baby. You time to pivot.
What about Mike McCarthy?
You want to do a Kellyanne Conway?
What about Mike McCarthy?
Alternate facts, Steve? Alternate facts?
I'll go right in the middle. Both you guys have good points. Cutter has not been a head coach since he was in college. Even Cutter has kvetched. I always like these Yiddish
words.
Oh,
that's not bad.
Oh, Cutter is kvetched. He's not anti-media, but he's overwhelmed with the media responsibilities. That it's like, oh my gosh, I got to do this. Sort of what Greg Schiano used to say. You know, people used to ask Greg Schiano, what's the biggest surprise from college to NFL? He goes, the media. And I think Cutter is learning on the job. First year coach, young quarterback. So I'll go in the middle with both you guys. I think Ira's got a point, but Steve also has a point. Let's see what happens after Cutter.
Way to take a stand, DeKemp.
Well, I think you both had valid points.
He took a stand.
They're not necessarily right or wrong. You were both correct.
You think that's a discussion Cutter could have with the Glazers in the offseason?
I think it's horse manure. Look, okay, well, here we are. Why hasn't he hired somebody else on his staff to help him out? No changes on the staff.
Maybe he will.
Maybe he will.
Well, last time he hired somebody on his staff was to keep track of the clock, and he didn't listen to him in the Rams game.
He didn't listen to him. Now, I think the reason... I understand that. I agree with Lee and the broader focus of Cutter had a learning.
And you agree with me out of principle.
He had a learning curve as a head coach. But to say he didn't have enough time to get his hands all over the offense in the way he needed to. This is also Jameis's second year in the system. Most of the whole O-line came back. They didn't have to break anybody
maybe
in.
Maybe it's just a case that the running game wasn't any good this year. Maybe that's
I think it was a major factor.
He didn't have the horses. Vincent Jackson was a train wreck even before he got hurt.
Vincent Jackson didn't do much. And
right.
That's horse manure. Jackson didn't do much in 2015 either, Steve. Come on. And he had a record-breaking offense.
Yes, he did. He had half a good season. And
he caught two touchdowns.
Ira, he played half a season in 2015. He played well. This year, he played four games and played like crap.
2015, Cutter openly lobbied the Glazers to re-sign Vincent Jackson. I can't remember what week, but I remember it like it was yesterday. Cutter saying, someone asked about Jackson being a potential salary cap cut, and Cutter's like, I hope he comes back. And he talked about all the things he could do, how he was such a versatile receiver. They can have to go back to the Chucky line. He could do X, he could do Y, he could do Z, he could sell popcorn.
You
and
can say all, you
on
can,
and on and on.
You can name all the letters in the alphabet to Kemper. It's not going to change the fact that he forgot his way into the end zone.
But Tutter did lobby publicly to keep him.
I understand. Either way, I think Cutter, I wouldn't use the word embarrassed, but I think he's very upset with the drop-off of the offense this year. He's very upset.
Sure, because he's offensive guy.
And he's got to take some of the responsibility, and I think he's willing to do so.
Sure, he deserves some of that responsibility, but I think he's got plenty of time. I'll just say that. And if he doesn't have time, he better freaking hire somebody to help him this offseason. Whatever that is, get some help in there, because otherwise there's no excuse.
I know I'll get in trouble for saying this. I want your opinion, Ira.
You're going to do another letter of the alphabet, Lee?
Not really, no.
Okay.
But what do you see that makes Mike Bajakian this quarterback guru second to Bill Walsh?
Well, we don't see what goes on behind the scenes, but the proof is
on the results.
The proof's on the field, Steve, and I don't think anybody can say that Jameis took a sizable leap up in 2016.
If Cutter,
I think that's fair.
If Cutter openly, and he has openly, whined about, I need to spend more time with Jameis, doesn't that kind of indict your quarterback coach?
Yeah, I'll go with Ira. It's just you don't know enough about what's going on behind the scenes. I'll throw it back to stuff that you've written on Twitter, Lee. Hey, the guy just threw 8,000 yards, set a record for first 2 years. Hey, it did pretty damn good, So it's hard to say without really knowing the ins and outs of behind the scenes.
Jameis Winston's not the problem around here. If there's a problem, he's not it.
No, not yet. He's got to keep improving because of the things we talked about before with the stiff competition in the division. It's just so hard statistically to win and not be a top 2-3 quarterback in your division, and there may not be there.
We got two new words, Steve, for our listeners and readers to think about. Toxic differential.
All right.
Oh, I thought you were going to talk about I can't remember it.
Stop kvetching over there.
No, it starts with a B. We read about it on Twitter.
Balustrade?
Yes.
No, toxic differential.
All right, thanks again to Hooters of Port Richey for hosting us here today. The full Hooters experience on the water in Port Richey.
The sun's out, Steve.
Your belly is full now, Ira. It's fantastic. And I've got another letter of the alphabet for you. That would be goodbye. We will see you next week on the podcast before you head off to get the job done.
Less than a week, I'll be heading to Houston town.
To get the job done for Mr. John Lynch. And so they'll build that wing for you at One Buck Place that you talked about last week.
There you go.
Hopefully they got the construction crew ready. The plans are set.
Look out, Houston. I'm on my way.
You'll be right next to the Shiano bathroom.